Bye-bye bailout. The government cuts its stake in AIG.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's the Morning Open, a look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the day. Coming up, we'll talk to the Treasury Department official who runs the TARP program about the government's big AIG stock sale. But first, where's Wall Street? Stocks are basically flat right now. The Dow is down 1 point at 12,354. The NASDAQ up about 0.2%, and the S&P 500 basically even. Now let's get to AIG. It was one of the biggest bailout recipients during the financial crisis. The company got into trouble, you may remember, insuring banks against losses on mortgage investments. And then, when all those investments went bad at the same time, AIG needed a $180 billion government bailout. Well, yesterday, the Treasury Department sold off 200 million shares, cutting its stake in AIG from 92% to 77%. Timothy Massett is the Treasury Department's acting Assistant Secretary for Financial Stability, and he's with us now from New York. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, how much did the government make on the sale of AIG?
We will get about $5.8 billion in proceeds. So this was a terrific step in recovering our investment in AIG.
But a lot of people say if you had sold shares earlier, you would have made more money.
Well, you know, it takes some time to get ready to do an offering like this. We have a lot of shares to sell, but we'll do it in an orderly manner so that we maximize value to the taxpayer.
You say it wasn't the government's aim, though, to make a profit off of AIG. Why not?
The government isn't a hedge fund. We're not trying to make investments to make a profit. But the fact is that we are hopeful that we can recover almost all of the money invested under the TARP program, and that's great news for the American taxpayer. The most important thing, of course, is that the actions taken prevented us from slipping into what could have been another Great Depression.
A lot of people looking back at the TARP say that the most dangerous thing about it was not that we might lose some money on it, but rather the precedent that it set for firms that take too much risk and think they're going to be bailed out by the government. What do you think of that?
Anytime the government provides assistance to a private company, there is moral hazard. And it's unfortunate that we didn't have the tools we needed to liquidate companies without having to do this. So I agree with that. The good news is that Congress has passed the Dodd-Frank legislation, which gives us a variety of new tools to liquidate companies whose failure would otherwise threaten the system. And it puts us in a position to avoid having to do this sort of thing again.
You think that Dodd-Frank solves the moral hazard problem?
Well, I think it gives us the tools to solve it, yes. But we have to implement those, and we have to use them aggressively and wisely.
Timothy Massett, Acting Assistant Secretary for Financial Stability at the Treasury Department. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, now let's turn to our regular Wednesday guest, Richard DeKayser, an economist with the Parthenon Group, who's with us live from Boston. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Well, what do you think? Do you agree that Dodd-Frank has sort of solved the moral hazard problem?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as saying it's solved it. It does help. This early intervention allowance by the Federal Reserve, which should prevent some real fiascos from happening. But so long as there are huge banks, for example, and the top five banks in this country have about 70% of all bank assets, that is, they're too big to fail, and as long as the government doesn't want to nationalize them, there will be a moral hazard, and it may be mitigated, but it's still out there.
Richard, all the rules from the Financial Regulation Reform Act, the Dodd-Frank Act, are being sort of figured out by the regulatory agencies right now, and the lobbyists are pouring in, trying to weaken them as much as they can. Do you think we'll end up with a good set of rules?
Well, I think we will. I think, well, relative to where we were, say, in 2008, I think things will be markedly improved. But, of course, lobbyists are working very hard to protect their interests, that is, shareholders of existing institutions. They don't want the government to impose a complete failure on them, so they will be watered down somewhat.
Richard DeKayser, economist with the Parthenon Group, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. By Novo Nordisk, since 1923, committed to diabetes care and areas of unmet medical needs at NovoNordisk-US.com. And by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733.
Well, there's some new bipartisan legislation in the Senate that would limit the amount of money you can borrow from your 401k retirement plan. For more, let's bring in LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, tell us about this new legislation in Washington.
Well, it's called the Savings Enhancement by Alleviating Leakage in 401k Savings Act.
Good
oh,
name.
My goodness. Yes, indeed. And what it's intended to do is basically make your 401k more of a nest egg and less of a piggy bank. And it does that by reducing the number of loans you can take from your 401k at any one time and then making it less onerous to pay it back so you can stay in the savings game.
And how common is it for people to turn their 401ks into piggy banks?
Well, according to Aon Hewitt, which is an HR firm, in 2010, what we saw was about 28% of 401k participants having an outstanding loan. That's up from 22% in 2005. The average loan out was almost $8,000.
And I assume that you do not think it's a good idea in general to dip into a 401k.
You assume correctly, my friend. Now, look, a 401k is all about the future. It's all about investing in your retirement. The idea that you're going to borrow against it while it might have immediate gratification for you is only robbing your future. It's something you want to be very careful about.
But is there ever a situation when somebody comes to you and says, I'm going to dip into my 401k for this reason, and you say, that's a good idea?
Well, I wouldn't say that's a good idea, but I would say I understand it. For example, let's say you lose your job. You've got to make a mortgage payment. You've got to make a car payment. You've got no other available funds. Well, then, yes, there it is. And you're going to have to do what you got to do. But generally speaking, Americans are bad savers. We need to be better at that game. And we also need to plan more for our retirements because, let's face it, Social Security, pensions, things like that might not be there for you. It's all about what you put into it, and that's what a 401k is.
LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And finally, to Auckland, New Zealand, where there appears to be a bug infestation problem at the Sky City Casino. Members of the staff have started wearing flea collars to avoid getting bitten. Apparently, management doesn't want to lose money by temporarily closing the 24-hour casino for an extermination. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Cigarette rolling shops offer cheaper smokes, but they're not technically cigarette makers, which means they don't technically pay taxes.
They make a profit off of the cigarettes that are being made, and they make a profit off the fact that the cigarettes are being manufactured in their store. To us, that meant that they were in the business of manufacturing cigarettes.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Why the DIY cigarette shop may go up in smoke. The story next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.